Welcome to the Buckmaster Show for Tuesday, the 1st of February, 2011. I am Bill Buckmaster, your host for the Buckmaster Show on KJLL AM 1330. We are always on the World Wide Web, also at buckmastershow.com. We're live weekday mornings from 9 to 10, and the program re-airs in its entirety from 7 to 8 p.m. here on KJLL The Jolt. The lineup for today's show includes a conversation with the first woman bishop of the Episcopal Church, who will be visiting Tucson on Sunday. We'll have a gem show preview. We will check in with General John Wickham, the Buckmaster Show contributor on military and foreign affairs, for his take on the revolt in Egypt. And we catch up with best-selling author J.A. Jantz, who is beginning a very big book tour today. The Buckmaster Show is primarily interview-driven, but of course there's always room for you, the listener, with comments and questions. You might want to jot down our Buckmaster Show live line, 529-3508. Biologist, oceanographer, university lecturer, author, aircraft pilot, rock climber, and the first female presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church, the Most Reverend Catherine Jeffert Shorey, is one very busy lady. Bishop Jeffert Shorey will be making an historic visit to the Tucson's St. Philip's in the Hills Episcopal Church this Sunday to celebrate the 75th anniversary of that well-known church on River Road. Bishop Jeffert Shorey is 5 years into her 9-year term as the Episcopal Church's first female presiding bishop, nearly 35 years after the first ordination of women priests in the Episcopal Church. It's a first also for the Anglican Communion, which has never before had a female priest leading one of its provinces in its 400-year history. And joining us now from New York is Bishop Jeffert Shorey. Bishop, thank you for talking with us on the Buckmaster Show.
You're very welcome. Good morning.
Good morning to you, and I'm wondering, as you prepare for your remarks to not only St. Philip's celebrating its 75th anniversary this Sunday, but there will be a community-wide gala banquet at the University of Arizona Student Union Ballroom on Sunday evening at 6:30 in the evening. Are you going to be talking about the healing that this community is right now in the midst of after the terrible Tucson shooting tragedy?
That certainly will be a part of my remarks. I would imagine that I will deal with that more extensively in my sermon on Sunday morning. My remarks on Sunday evening are primarily going to be focused on the broad understanding of mission, how we help to heal a world that is in great need of it.
Bishop, what do you see as the future of the Episcopal Church or even all mainline churches, which have certainly been losing membership for a number of years?
Well, we live in a society that has changed its focus in many ways. People do not join organizations in the way that they did 50 years ago. Young adults in particular are asking important spiritual questions. And if congregations, faith communities are going to grow, they need to tend to those questions in ways that make sense to young adults. Certainly that has something to do with the manner in which we worship, the style of our worship services, but it also has to do with whether or not we get out of our comfortable buildings and go and meet people where they are. And the campus ministry at University of Arizona is a good example of that. And I believe that they're the hosts for this banquet on Sunday evening.
Talk about some of the challenges you've been facing as the first female presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church. You're about halfway into your 9-year term, actually a bit further along in your halfway point. What are some of the challenges you've been dealing with?
Well, I think the principal challenge is about how we proclaim good news in changing environments. Certainly in a place like Arizona, a great deal of our ministry has to do with attending to shifting demographics. More and more people come from other parts of the world. Certainly in Arizona, many of them speak Spanish, or they are the descendants of people with a Hispanic or Latino heritage. and how our worship services shift in order to serve those needs is a significant part of it.
Tell me about your own religious experience. How did you come to this point in your life where you were, where the calling came, your ordination, and what led you to where you are right now?
Well, I was working as an oceanographer in the mid-1980s, and three people in my congregation asked me if I'd ever thought about being a priest. I hadn't. When I was growing up, women weren't ordained in the church. In fact, the first women were not ordained until just after I graduated from college. So it was a surprising encounter, and it took me, a significant period of discernment, essentially 5 years to say yes to that call.
Do you see that the Episcopal Church perhaps may be going the way of Christian churches in England and Europe and being seen as somewhat irrelevant to modern society?
Well, we're irrelevant when we don't pay attention to the questions that people are asking. I think the Episcopal Church in many places is doing a very good job of attending to the questions people are asking. The aftermath of the shootings in Tucson is a good example. How do we make sense out of a violent world? How do we make sense out of a society that thinks it's appropriate to use extremely vitriolic language? Christians have an obligation to help people learn how to have civil conversations where we treat each other with dignity and respect a variety of opinions, even when those opinions may seem beyond the pale. How do we help people to converse in ways that lower the level of violence rather than increase it?
What do you say to those folks here in Tucson who are having trouble making sense out of that horrible day, January 8th? What advice or what kind of a compass can you point them in the direction of trying to make sense out of this?
Well, certainly doing that in community is important. Finding a group of people who will walk that journey with you. There's abundant grief in the aftermath of those events. And none of us does the work of grieving very well when we do it in isolation. So look for a community who will let you cry if you need to cry, who will ask questions with you or listen to your questions, a community in which you can tell stories about people who are no longer with us, a community of comfort, and a community of encouragement.
It's now about 15 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show, and we are speaking with the Most Reverend Catherine Jeffert Shorey, who is the head of the Episcopal Church in the United States. Bishop Jeffert Shorey, I know you were out in Phoenix last fall. Immigration and border issues very important to you. You did go down to the border. What was your impression of what you saw at the border?
Well, I think the most significant piece of what we saw and experienced was a panel one evening in a church in Douglas, Arizona, that included a rancher, an activist who works on immigration issues, the head of the local group of the Border Patrol, the sheriff of Douglas, people who are engaged in a wide variety of encounters with migrants and people who serve migrants and people who seek to prevent illegal immigration. To a person, they said that our current laws and system are broken. We depend on the labor of migrants, and if our society is going to thrive, we need to find a way to encourage legal labor and legal and effective migration, and in a way that treats people decently and with dignity.
Bishop, what role should the church be playing, if any, in politics? Should the church be endorsing candidates going that far, or where should the line be drawn?
Well, the church and communities of faith are never appropriate when they encourage their members to vote for a specific candidate. But we have a highly significant role in asking questions about value. When we ask questions of ethics and morality about particular policies, where we can encourage communities to see what a healed world might look like and what kinds of policies might help us to reach that circumstance.
According to a recent article in Time magazine, baby boomers are the fastest growing demographic at more than 250 theological graduate schools in the United States and Canada. Any theory on what's driving the increase?
Well, I think many people are asking questions of meaning, what significance their own lives have and how they can make a positive difference in the world. But it's not limited to baby boomers. The largest growing and fastest growing demographic in Episcopal theological schools seems to be young adults. We're seeing a reduction in average age of seminarian rather than an older crowd.
The young people being called to ordination, so it's still happening as far as you're concerned. Are the numbers looking good for young people being drawn?
Yes, and I think some dioceses, some regional areas of the church have done a much better job in calling young adults into ordained leadership and into lay leadership. But it should be obvious that if the church is going to continue, it needs to continue to encourage younger people into leadership.
It's a huge problem in the Catholic Church, and most people think it's because of the celibacy issue. Would you agree with that? Is that what's holding back younger people into the Catholic Church?
Well, I'm not a Roman Catholic, but I certainly know that Americans in particular want to make their own decisions about the kind of life they will lead as an adult. The Episcopal Church receives a significant number of former Roman Catholic priests every year. The Roman Catholics certainly receive a few of ours.
As a scientist, you're an oceanographer, a biologist. Talk a little bit about the tension between science and religion, and especially the current excitement about books by atheists.
Well, theology and religion ask questions about meaning, what it means to be a human being, what it means to be in relationship with God, what it means to be in relationship with other human beings and the rest of creation. Science asks questions about mechanism, how things have come to be the way they are, how they work together. To go through life with only one of those ways of seeing the world is, in some sense, a handicap. I and many other people of faith understand that using both ways of seeing the world, asking both kinds of questions, lets one live a much richer kind of existence.
There's been some splintering of the Episcopal Church here in the United States over some of the controversies over the way the services are actually conducted. Is that still a problem in the United States with splinter groups of the Episcopal Church?
I think the recent departures are fairly well finished, but you know, Episcopalians and indeed in all American faith traditions, there is a sense that people want to make their own particular decisions about what's most important, and that if they can't agree with the rest of their brothers and sisters, they often go off and start something new. In the 1870s and 1880s in the Episcopal Church, people were arguing about whether or not you could have candles on the altar or wear colored vestments. We're not arguing about that anymore, but certainly some groups broke off because of those conversations.
Tell us about what are some of the challenges you're facing now in your remaining 4 years of your 9-year term, and is there a mechanism for you to extend this term and go for another 9-year term?
Well, it is possible that a person could be reelected. I don't know that will be appropriate when the time comes. But the work right now is about mission. It's about engaging the world around us, helping to serve a broken world. It's about engaging new contexts, the immigrant populations all around us, and not just from Spanish-speaking countries. We have a growing demographic in the Episcopal Church of Sudanese refugees who have begun Sudanese churches in the Anglican or Episcopal tradition. So it's enormously exciting. There's wonderfully challenging work to do, and I think it's one of the most interesting times to be an Episcopalian in a very long time.
Bishop Jaffer Chory, thank you for being with us. We'll look forward to your visit to Tucson this upcoming weekend. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
The Most Reverend Catherine Bishop, she's Bishop Catherine Jaffer Chory. She'll be participating in several services at St. Philip's in the Hills on Sunday, February the 6th, including a special choral evensong at 4:30 in the afternoon. And there will be a special celebration at the University of Arizona Student Union, a gala banquet. That will be at 6:30 p.m. in the ballroom on February 6th. To purchase tickets for that gala event, contact stphillipstucson.org. We'll be talking about the GEM show next. This is the Buckmaster Show, 22 minutes past the hour on this February 1st.
The Arizona Inn is the only Tucson hotel named by Travel and Leisure magazine as one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. Located in Midtown, close to the University of Arizona, the Arizona Inn is located at 2200 East Elm Street and on the web at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn maintains AAA Four Diamond status for both the hotel and dining room, with Chef Allison serving up breakfast, lunch, and dinner daily, with a featured menu and seasonal favorites. And because the Arizona Inn is listed on the National Register of Historic Places, founded by Arizona's first Congresswoman, Isabella Greenway, the Arizona Inn provides an historic backdrop for your next special event. Arizona Inn is the perfect setting for weddings, anniversary celebrations, or your next business meeting, and you can make your reservations online at arizonainn.com. The Arizona Inn, luxury and elegance in the heart of Tucson.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is your one-stop store for fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and Mont Blanc and other top-of-the-line writing instruments. Order online at sarnoffart.com or visit owner-operator Henry Sarnoff and his store staffed by artists, for artists, and those who seek the finest quality in everything art-related. Sarnoff Artist Materials, 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at sarnoffart.com.
Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero More, Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza, topped with the finest, freshest quality ingredients. Enjoy casual yet upscale dining while sampling our extensive boutique wine list. Vero More in Tucson at North Swan and Camp Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veromorepizza.com. And coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastro pub.
About 25 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show. A quick reminder, the Buckmaster Show brought to you in part by Flowers Rieger and Associates Certified Public Accountants, located at 2919 East Broadway and on the web at flowersrieger.com. Flowers and Rieger, the CPA firm of the Buckmaster Show. Well, the Tucson Gem and Mineral Fossil Showcase is now underway and will be going until at least February the 13th at numerous locations in the city, from giant white tents to exhibit halls. With us on the Buckmaster Show live line, Jessica Stevens of the Metropolitan Tucson Convention and Visitors Bureau. Jessica, how are you doing?
Good morning. I'm doing well, thanks.
How's this year's show looking?
This weekend seemed to be, you know, pretty big success, actually. A lot of people were so excited about it. We have three new shows this year, too. So, look like the crowds are getting out and enjoying themselves.
What kind of an overview can you give us now on this year's events? How many locations are we talking about? And perhaps how many people may be actually visiting Tucson?
Ooh, I can say the tens of thousands, at least. We haven't actually been able to track it for the last few years, just, you know, budgetary reasons. We haven't had the money to do a study, but just estimation, it's in the tens of thousands. We have 45 shows in 43 locations around town. So the big white tents that you see aren't it. That's not all there is to the gem show. There's actually several around town, around Tucson, so you get a good feel for it.
How big a deal is this gem show to Tucson as far as you're concerned at the Metropolitan Tucson Convention and Visitors Bureau? Is this kind of the big event of the year for us?
This is one of our big events, obviously, and it draws a very specific crowd. It's bringing in the people, you know, the dealers, the vendors, the consumers for the specific, items. So gems, minerals, and fossils, obviously. But I, as, you know, someone from the general public, I really enjoy just going out and seeing everything. It's amazing the kind of stuff that they have out there.
I was going to say, if somebody is looking to figure out what's available,
uh-huh.
Is there a one-stop shopping kind of place where you can get a good map and get a feel for what's going on around town?
Yeah. Over the years, the CVB has kind of become the, you know, depository for all the information, and we have everything for you. Conveniently packaged. Visit tucson.org/gemshow.
The show got its start back in 1955.
Yeah.
So many satellite shows emerged that the event now is spanning over 2 weeks. The big finale is in downtown Tucson on the last weekend, and sometimes people don't understand that really was the reason the Gem Show got underway, is that a big event at the Tucson Convention Center, isn't it?
Right, and that's the main event, we call it. It's the the one, obviously, at the TCC, and it's, you know, hopefully going to be a great, great turnout this week. It's the last weekend. It happens over the final weekend, and, you know, treasure hunters, you know, general public, people who just want to see what's there, and that's the fun of it, really.
That's the Tucson Gem and Minerals Show. It's the finale piece, and it is at the Tucson Convention Center, and you'll be able to see some of the largest some of the largest minerals in the world.
Yeah.
And this year's theme is Minerals of California.
Minerals of California, right. And there's over 250 on exhibit that you can check out. So
quickly, Jessica, mm-hmm. a little update on February. It's the big event, big month for Tucson. You've got the rodeo, the golf tournament, perhaps some spring training baseball starting.
Right. Actually, we have the Tucson Padres are coming in, but I don't believe they start until later on in the year, so maybe around April.
But February certainly is the big
February
amount.
Is, yeah. The Tucson Rodeo, one of my favorite events. You know, growing up here, we used to go to it every year when I was younger, and I missed out on it for a few because I was out of town, but I'm back now, and I'm looking forward to it. That starts February 19th. And it goes through the 27th.
Okay. Jessica yeah. Stevens of the Metropolitan Tucson Convention and Visitors Bureau, thank you very much for giving us an update on the Tucson Gem, Mineral, and Fossil Showcase, now cranked up and all ready to go and underway around the downtown Tucson area. Jessica, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Coming up now on 30 minutes past the hour, this is The Buckmaster Show on KJLL AM 1330 and always on the web at buckmastershow.com.
Local talk at its best.
What are you talking about?
Local talk at its best.
What are you talking about?
Tucson's Jolt. KJLL, South Tucson.
CNN Radio, I'm Bill Caiaccio. Thousands of flights are canceled because of the major winter storm moving across the center of the country. Karen Carney at Will Rogers Airport in Oklahoma City says they're not used to this kind of weather.
People are heeding advice and staying home, not coming to the airport, which because there are no flights coming in, so there's no reason to come. But yeah, it's a little bit different for us.
One runway has reopened at the Dallas-Fort Worth Airport. It was closed for over 2 hours. There are states of emergency because of the storm in Oklahoma, Missouri, Illinois, and Kansas. It's wall-to-wall people in Cairo's Tahrir Square for the March of Millions. They're demanding that President Hosni Mubarak leave. The State Department wants all non-essential U.S. government employees in Egypt to get out. Jordan's king got rid of his government today and appointed a new prime minister. And Democrats today picked Charlotte, North Carolina to host their national convention in 2012. This is CNN Radio.
Hi, I ordered flowers for my wife.
Oh, right here, sir. I've got 2 dozen long-stemmed roses with white lilies in a beautiful crystal vase. An excellent choice.
Thanks. So how much do I owe you?
Oh, it's free.
Free?
That's right.
Well, happy anniversary to me.
Free is better. Do your simple federal return for free at TurboTax.com. It's free to prepare, free to print, and free to e-file. No wonder TurboTax is the most trusted brand of tax software in America. Visit TurboTax.com today. Trusted brand claim based on Intuit Commission survey, August 2010.
Total customer care. That's what makes Midas different. It's how we get to know you and your car, explain things in a way you'll understand, and give you service and repair options that respect your budget. From routine maintenance like oil changes, tires, and brakes, to advanced engine diagnostics and major system repair. Come to Midas and see the difference Total customer care can make. People and prices you can trust. That's the Midas touch.
Hi, I ordered flowers for my wife.
Oh, right here, sir. I've got 2 dozen long-stemmed roses with white lilies in a beautiful crystal vase. An excellent choice.
Thanks. So how much do I owe you?
Oh, it's free.
Free?
That's right.
Well, happy anniversary to me.
Free is better. Do your simple federal return for free at TurboTax.com. It's free to prepare, free to print, and free to e-file. No wonder TurboTax is the most trusted brand of tax software in America. Visit TurboTax.com today. Trusted brand claim based on Intuit Commission survey, August 2010.
Listed on the National Register of Historic Places and founded by Isabella Greenway, Arizona's first congresswoman, the Arizona Inn is still the standard bearer for luxury hospitality in Midtown Tucson, just minutes from the University of Arizona. Founded in 1930, the Arizona Inn continues to win top honors for hospitality and dining. Travel and Leisure magazine names the Arizona Inn one of the top 500 hotels in the world for 2011. And the Arizona Inn is proud of its AAA four diamond status for both the hotel and dining room. Whether it's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, or a private event, you can count on Chef Allison's featured seasonal culinary creations to please. The Arizona Inn, a special oasis of hospitality in Midtown Tucson, 2200 East Elm, and on the web at arizonainn.com.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tancredi, at the southwest corner of Tancredi and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tancredi, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery on the corner of Tancredi and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Coming up on 35 minutes past the hour on the Buckmaster Show, the Obama administration is trying to reassure the Arab world today that the United States is not advocating any specific outcome in Egypt, where demonstrations continued to grow. Today was the biggest demonstration in Cairo in a week of demonstrations as protesters demand that Hosni Mubarak end his 29-year rule of that North African country. Joining us on the Buckmaster Show live line is the Buckmaster Show contributor on military and foreign affairs, General John Wickham, former U.S. Army Chief of Staff and commander of all American and U.S. forces in Korea. General Wickham served a total of 41 years in the Army. He's now retired in Oro Valley. General Wickham, good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, Bill. Yes, these are portentous times for the United States and, of course, Egypt and many countries in the Middle East.
You know, before we talk about Egypt, I want to acknowledge an event that you will be attending this afternoon at Congresswoman Gabrielle Gifford's office at Swan and Pima. At 2 o'clock this afternoon, you will be presenting two Tucson veterans with some medals that were secured by Congresswoman Gifford's office. There's Richard Bell. He spent a Vietnam veteran, spent a year on the Vietnam-Cambodian border as a Green Beret. Then there's Rudolph Guzman, 81 years old, and his daughter actually was the instrumental in securing this medal for his work in the Korean War.
Yes, it'll be an honor for me to do this. And you know, Bill, it's probably one of the best medicines that Gabrielle Giffords could have is to realize that her professional office staff continues the routine and very difficult work to serve the constituents that Gabby Giffords loves so much. So this is an honor for me to be able to do this. I've done it in the past for her. So, yes, it's a special opportunity for us to recognize the veterans and their families.
General Wickham, let's turn our attention to Egypt. Why is this turmoil in Egypt of such a concern to the United States?
Well, it's Egypt, you know, is the largest Muslim country in the region, 83 million people. And President Mubarak has been a strong ally for us for almost 30 years. Unfortunately, he has been a bit of a dictator, although people don't want to use that word, but it's true. And I've seen this. I've experienced it in Korea with the Park Chung-hee, the dictator there for 18 years. And unfortunately, Mubarak has not led Egypt into the modern era, has not done good things for his people. Park Chung-hee in Korea did. He led Korea into the modern world and turned Korea, South Korea, into one of the real Asian tigers, economic tigers. So it's important for us to maintain stability. And I think that the Obama administration is moving in the right direction to allow the Egyptian people to solve their own leadership problems rather than for us to tip it one way or the other. Yes, we do need to recognize the aspirations of yearning people for a better life. On the other hand, we don't want to be seen as supporting authoritarian rule indefinitely. There's just too much of this going on in the world. You see it in South Africa, in the Ivory Coast, and Zimbabwe with Mugabe. I mean, both of these leaders down there are just ravaging their countries.
You know, I think many people would be surprised to learn that Egypt, General Wickham, and I know you know this, is the 10th largest army in the world, and that Egypt has been the site for Operation Bright Star. That's the multinational exercise intended to boost the readiness of the United States, Egyptian, and coalition forces. How would you rate the Egyptian military machine?
I've been over there. I was a guest of the Egyptian Army Chief of Staff when I was head of the U.S. Army, and toured a number of bases over there, and I was struck by the professional standards, very high standards, even though it's a draft army. These are quality young men and a few women, mostly men, and a professional officer corps. The Army Chief of Staff at the time, Orabi, a very tall, handsome-looking Egyptian, and so I think they're well-led, and my take on it now is that the Army is probably playing the crucial role in stabilizing the country. As you know, we've read that they have said, yes, people can come out and demonstrate, we're not going to fire on them. Unfortunately, in Korea, when we had this situation, the Korean Army did fire on Koreans and killed hundreds of them in the city of Gwangju. But it's a different circumstance. The Koreans over there were concerned about the North Koreans intervening and starting another war.
How great is the risk, General Wickham, that the revolt in Egypt could spread to the Persian Gulf countries, particularly those big oil-producing countries with ties to the United States, such as Saudi Arabia?
Each country is unique in its own historical situation. Saudi Arabia is particularly one that's unique. Syria, another one. Jordan, another one. There doesn't seem to be any wide popular movement to get rid of the Jordanian leadership, although I just noticed today that he's appointed a new prime minister. And Syria, unclear there. Saudi Arabia, the king and the royal family there has ruled that for decades, and they've been very clever. They have built a Saudi National Guard and a Saudi army. The National Guard keeps its eye on the army and vice versa, so that if the army is not loyal to the royal family, then the guard can be used to suppress any unrest. So it doesn't seem to be in Saudi Arabia any great movement has occurred in Tunisia or in Egypt to overthrow the regime. So I think there's a reasonable degree of stability. Nonetheless, I do think that these autocratic rulers, and even in Iran, are beginning to counsel with their advisors about what we must do to listen to the aspirations of our people and what can we do to move our countries more into modernity the way they should be. And it will take some doing because, as we all know, the Islamic fundamentalists, the imams and their preaching do not want to move too fast.
We're talking with John Wickham, former chief of staff of the U.S. Army. General Wickham is now retired up in Oro Valley. General Wickham, I know you keep a close watch on the Defense Department. There are some big changes in 2011 coming on board with Secretary of Defense Gates saying he would like to retire. And then you have the Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Mullen. His two-year tour is going to end. What are the implications?
Well, it's unclear right now, Bill. You're right that Bob Gates has said he would like to leave, but he's been very tight-lipped about his plans and the date. And my guess is that he and the president have talked about this and that perhaps the president has persuaded Bob Gates to stay on a little longer, maybe another year or so, and Gates is sort of deferring to the president to make the announcement at the appropriate time. But even if Bob Gates does leave, there are some extraordinarily able people that can step in and pick right up. One of them that quickly comes to mind is the former chairman of the House Armed Services Committee, Ike Skelton, longtime chairman of that committee, well-versed in military matters, well-regarded on the Hill. He was defeated in this last election, but he's been a congressman for almost 30 years. He could do it. You've got Dick Danzig, who has been the former Secretary of the Navy, Rhodes Scholar, a law professor at GW in Washington, D.C., been an advisor to Obama. He could step in and pick up. Ms. Flournoy, the Deputy Secretary of Defense for Policy, is another person, a woman. It would be a unique thing to pick a woman as Secretary of Defense. So there are people that could pick up. Now, on the chairman's role, Mike Mullen has done an extraordinary job as chairman. He's probably one of the best we've ever had. And he's finishing a two-year tour, but he could be extended for two more years. Many of the chairmen we've had in the past have been chairman for 4 years. So that's a possibility. But if not, were he to leave, there are people, his deputy, General Cartwright, a Marine Corps general, could step in and replace him.
General Wickham, when we started this year and when we first talked with you on the Buckmaster radio show the first week of January, the situation was still very hot in North Korea. Things have cooled down considerably, and our mutual friend Steve Herman, who reports out of Seoul, South Korea, for the Voice of America, is saying that aid groups, those are the groups that provide aid in North Korea, say the winter there has been unusually harsh on the northern side of the country, and that could account for perhaps now why North Korea may be a little more anxious to start talks with the South.
I think Steve's right. Incidentally, he does very good work with his reporting for the Voice of America in Seoul. He sends me the material that he sends out all over. There are various factors at work here. It's clear that the North Koreans and the South Koreans are about to sit down at the same table and talk. As a matter of fact, I think at the colonel level in the military, they are arranging for these talks right now to begin on the 8th or so of this month. The genesis of it, yes, is the winter weather, and North Korea is one of the poorest countries in the world. Famine is there. It's a basket case economically. But the Chinese are playing a very constructive but silent role in influencing this event, this situation. I am convinced of that. They don't blow the horns and say, look what we're doing. But they're listening to us, and they realize that they do not need unrest on their border. And the Chinese have said publicly that they want to see a denuclearized Korean Peninsula. Now, the North Koreans have refused in these talks that are going to come up to talk about the nuclear issue. They've got 6 nuclear weapons that we've detected and the makings of another 6. Dangerous because they could export some of this stuff. They could threaten to use them. I don't think they ever would, but the threat is enough as a deterrent. I don't know that anybody or any nation, including the United States, has the ability to persuade the North Koreans to give them up. Why would they give them up? It's their ace in the hole. And we may have to come to learn to live with a North Korea that does have nuclear weapons and figure out ways, smart ways, enlightened ways, to constrain their behavior.
You know, I want to talk a little bit about China. There was an interesting piece in yesterday's Washington Examiner by James J. Carafano. Ignoring China's military buildup is at our own peril. Yes, China has a robust economy, but let's not forget that they continue to be a very, very formidable military power.
That's true, and I visited over there a number of times, and one time as Army Chief of Staff, and I've been to their military units, and I was struck by the professional standards, their ability with tank gunnery, their ability with infantry weapons. They're as good as us. And their ability on submarines, even though they were antiquated submarines, they kept them in first-rate condition. So, yes, they are modernizing. They are putting good equipment at the hands of their People's Liberation Army, and I think the United States needs to continue modernization. Now, this is one of the key elements of Secretary of Defense Gates in his efforts to modernize and also save resources in the Defense Department budget so that we can modernize. We've got to improve the Air Force in the United States. We're flying 50-year-old aircraft. We have to put better weapons in the hands of our Marines and Army, and also in the Air Force, and we've got to improve the weaponry on our naval forces as well. So I think there's a sensitivity to what the Chinese are doing in terms of modernizing their military and broadening the reach of their military, and it could pose a threat to us in the long run, but not a challenge right now, but I think we've got to continue what we're doing to modernize.
General Wickham, Stan Abrams of the Veterans Advisory Council for Congresswoman Giffords is on our Buckmaster Show live line. I'd like to take that call, so please stay with us, General. Mr. Abrams, Stan Abrams, go ahead.
Yeah, I happened to be listening, and I heard that General Wickham was on, and I've had the privilege of meeting him as part of the Congresswoman Giffords Veterans Advisory Group. And I was particularly impressed. It was fascinating. About a couple of months ago, there was a meeting down at the Veterans, the VA hospital, and General Shinseki, who now runs the VA, was there, and General Wickham was there. And I guess they had not seen each other for a very long time, each of them having been former chiefs of staff of the Army. It was just from a personal point, in my personal point of view, it was just a great experience. And I'm terribly taken with General Wickham. He is just an exceptional person. And boy, does he know his stuff. Anyway, that's my...
He really does. Stan, thank you so much for calling in. General Wickham is a wonderful... He's a terrific resource for this community.
Absolutely. There is just... We are so happy and so pleased to have a man like him.
Thank you. Thank you. Stan Abrams on the phone there. General, certainly well-deserved comments there.
Well, that was nice to comment. If I could just quickly, I know you've got to move on, Bill, make a comment about that
meeting down
there with General Shinseki. Congresswoman Giffords was there, and there's no doubt in the minds of those people at that large meeting of the fundamental enlightened seminal role that Congresswoman Giffords has played with the Veterans Affairs Committee that she's been on. The VA budget is the largest in 30 years. They get their budget 1 year in advance so that they can now plan on hiring and buying medicines and building, and they could never do that before. And Shinseki talked about that, and he specifically praised Congresswoman Giffords for her enlightened leadership on that committee. And so she was very humble about this, so it was a special recognition of the important role that she plays. And we've got one of the best VA situations with our hospital down here, as you know.
General Wickham, it's always an honor talking with you, sir. Thank you very much. We'll look forward to your next visit with us the first week of March. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Bill. God bless.
Thank you, sir. We've got J.A. Jantz, the New York Times bestselling author. Coming up next, this is The Buckmaster Show on KJLL.
Sarnoff Artist Materials is Tucson's award-winning destination for everything art-related, including fine and graphic artist supplies, framing, stationery, and the world's best writing instruments. Visit owner-operator, artist Henry Sarnoff at 2504 North Campbell, three blocks north of Grant, and always at the easy-to-navigate website, sarnoffart.com. Because it takes an artist to know an artist's needs.
Vero Amore presents Tucson's only certified authentic Neapolitan pizza using fresh homemade mozzarella and the finest quality toppings. Taste pizza as it was meant to be at Vero Amore, casual yet upscale dining with an extensive boutique wine list. Vero Amore in Tucson at North Swan and Cap Lowell, Dove Mountain in Marana, and on the web at veroamorepizza.com. Coming soon, Noble Hops, Tucson's first gastropub.
Hi, I'm Mark Sublett, owner of Medicine Man Gallery, and I'd like to invite you to come visit me. Medicine Man Gallery is located at 7000 East Tinka Verde, at the southwest corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, and online at medicinemangallery.com. With 12,000 square feet of exhibit space, we have a wide array of American paintings, antique Indian art, and contemporary modern art by some of the masters of the West, including Ed Mell, John Moyers, and Maynard Dixon. If you have old Indian art or American paintings you'd like to sell or consign, call me for a free evaluation, as we're always looking to add to our collection. If you can't visit us on Tinka Verde, then visit us online. We have over 6,000 objects to view at medicinemangallery.com. So come visit me, Mark Sublett, at Medicine Man Gallery, on the corner of Tinka Verde and Sabino Canyon, where there's always something new to see.
Are you up for the challenge? It's the third annual Boot Camp Challenge, March 19th. Join Olympic athletes, local armed forces, and celebrities as we laugh, climb, crawl, walk, run, and work out boot camp style through a 5K run-walk obstacle course. To sign up as an individual or a team, go to beatcancerbootcamp.com or call 546-1601 for the Cancer Boot Camp Challenge, 7:30 Saturday morning, March 19th at Brandy Fenton Park. For strength, for health, for life, for fun.
It's 55 minutes past the hour when New York Times bestselling writer J.A. Jantz releases a new book. Her legions of fans around the world stand up and cheer. Today, Ms. Jantz's new book, Fatal Error, which marks the return of her compelling Ollie Reynolds suspense series, is being released. To support the release of the book, Ms. Jantz is beginning a book tour. J.A. Jantz is the author of the Ollie Reynolds series, the J.P. Beaumont series, the Joanna Brady series, and four interrelated Southwestern thrillers featuring the Walker family. J.A. Jantz joins us now on the Buckmaster Show, live line from Phoenix. Judy, good to talk with you.
It's good to talk to you. Another opening, another show.
Do you like these book tours?
I do like them, but I'm always nervous, and so I stayed up awake until 3 o'clock this morning worrying about my 4:30 a.m. Wake-up call for a 6 a.m. live TV appearance, and so somebody's going to look at me and say, oh, you look so tired. Well, guess what? I am.
Fatal Error, new book. This is book number... number six in the Allie Reynolds series. Overall book, this is number 30.
I think it's 43.
43.
But who's counting?
Yeah, who's counting at this point? You've got quite a few tour stops coming up. Actually, in the Tucson area, you'll be at Clues Unlimited this Saturday night. That's at 3146 East Fort Lowell Road. And at Barnes & Noble on Sunday night, 7 p.m. at the Barnes & Noble on East Broadway. Give us the quick thumbnail sketch of Fatal Error. And I do want to point out that, Judy, you will be joining me live in studio next Tuesday, I believe.
Yes, that is correct. I've got that on my list.
Tell us a little bit about Fatal Error quickly.
This book starts with Allie Reynolds at a police academy training center, thinking she's going to go to work for the sheriff's department when she graduates. But, you know, the economy has taken a hit, and so have law enforcement budgets, so that's not working out very well for her.
Go ahead.
Allie has, like me, she has a total inability to mind her own business, and so when a friend asks for help with her missing fiancé, Allie rides to the rescue, and all is not as it would seem.
And Allie is loosely based on a former Tucson television anchor person, isn't that correct?
Well, yes, that was the starting point for that series came when Patty Weiss was sort of sent into the back of the beyond from her newscasting post in Tucson. And it seemed like a good place to start with a new character. So, yes, Allie is not Patty Weiss in any fashion, but what happened to Patty Weiss was the spark that lit the Allie Reynolds fire.
Judy Jantz, we'll look forward to talking with you live in studio with us next week. So have a good book tour. You're up in the Phoenix area today, I guess, right?
I'm up in the Phoenix area, and you know what? It's cold in the Phoenix area today.
Be safe. Have a great book tour, and we'll see you next week.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Thanks. J.A. Jantz, New York Times best-selling author. Her new book, Fatal Error, is just being released today. We've got about 1 minute to go here on the Buckmaster Show. I want to remind you that Dr. Gordon Avey, who is the director of the Sarver Heart Center at the University of Arizona, will be our guest live in studio to start the program off tomorrow. If you have any questions relating to the heart, this is the guy to call in and ask those questions of. That number is 529-3508. Might want to jot that number down, 529-3508. Call Dr. Avey tomorrow with your heart questions. I am Bill Buckmaster on KJLL and BuckmasterShow.com. Thank you for listening. Have a great day.
This is Tucson's Jolt.
Tucson's Jolt.
KJLL.
Now you're talking.
South Tucson.